Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Bob is only seeing with one eye. I actually can see with two eyes, but I have double vision. So I'd like to thank both of Bob for inviting me and all 400 of you for being here. When Bob called me some months ago and he said, we have 100 progressive Catholics in Santa Barbara who've been meeting for a while and wanted you to come and talk to them. And I know not all of you are Catholics, but, you know, I thought, I've never been around 100 progressive Catholics in my whole life. And here you are. Wow. There's hope for the Catholic tradition right here in this group. And I've been excited to meet with your steering committee last night. We had a wonderful time. And wow. Thank the Lord for you all and your exploring and all the journeys you've been on. I've been a follower of Jesus and a church person for all my life. Last night it was interesting to hear those at the table at some restaurant out on the wharf or whatever it is. It was wonderful. Talk about they were cradle Catholics. And I thought, how interesting. The Baptist, the nursery in the Baptist church is called the cradle roll. Before I was born, I was enrolled in the cradle roll. So I guess I'm a cradle Baptist. I don't know. I thought I'd be a Baptist all my life, but the Baptists had other plans for me when they kicked me out. Growing up in a Baptist church, I was always the one who asked the difficult questions because it seemed to me there was always more. There's always more. And I don't want to settle for a formulation or understanding of Jesus that's 1,600 years old. I think there's more. Jesus said the Spirit's got more to teach us, and I believe He's true to His Word. He's been teaching, we just haven't been listening. Greatest joy of my life is to learn that more about the spiritual life and to share it with others. I've always been progressing and evolving my spiritual life, but kind of things came to a sort of a standstill about 15 years ago. I sort of thought, well, I've learned what I needed to learn, and okay, we'll spend the rest of my life doing it. And then I came across a fellow named Ken Wilber, who has studied all the traditions and cultures and streams of thought on the whole world and taken the best from all of them and integrated them in together into what he calls integral theory. And as I read his works and saw that there were five of the aspects of integral theory that particularly grabbed me, my own spiritual life began being renewed. Now, this was embarrassing because I'm a Southern Baptist and Ken Wilber's a Buddhist. So I didn't tell my congregation that at first, okay? But the five major elements, you all have been, if you've been reading my book, they're the five sections of my book. And let's see. Let me turn off the lights now. These five elements are what I call a spiritual positioning system. You know, I can't get anywhere without the GPS and the one on my phone and so on. And so this seemed to be a spiritual positioning system, these five elements, like the satellites that our GPSs bounce off of. There's these five elements. And as I began to talk about this to my congregation, I would talk about what I call the five S's of the of the spiritual positioning system, and how this system sort of gave us a point of where we are, maybe where we've come from, maybe where we'd like to go. And the five elements were stages and states and standpoints and shadow and steps. And as I was talking about these, I would notice my congregation, their eyes would begin to glaze over. Now, you all are used to a lot of good thinking and so on, so I don't see any glazed eyes yet this morning. But anyway, I thought recently I need to help make this more memorable and a little mnemonic device to help me. And so we started with steps. I thought about stepping up. And let's have a guy, steps or practices that accelerate our spiritual evolution. So let's have a guy our age stepping up. He can still do it, and that's a wonderful thing to be able to keep climbing the steps. So that's steps. That's the way we can remember that. And then the idea was to step up to the next stage, and the stages are levels where your life is played out. Shakespeare says all of life is a stage. That's the place or station you are in life that allows us to see what we see. And so stage was easy because we just drop a stage down, okay? And one of the things that actors do is when they step on stage, they change their way of being. They change their state of consciousness. And so step up to the next stage and state. States are ever higher levels of consciousness. That's what we're going to be talking about this morning. Well, we had to work in shadow. Shadow is that part of us that's our hidden self. Can you all see that okay back there? I know it's a little okay. That's our hidden self. And I have a whole chapter on that. That part was easy. We'll just put a spotlight on the guy, and there's the shadow, okay? So there's our shadow. Now, we had to work God into this, so I decided to let God be a sort of a shining light on everything. And so we ended up with see your shadow and God from a new standpoint. There they are, all five of these S's. And the standpoints are the three perspectives on God. We're going to talk about that tonight, painting a new picture of God. I'm very excited about it. My church has been practicing this now for 10 years, and it's one of the most revolutionary things that's happened in our liturgy and our worship and our own private prayer times. But this morning, we're going to talk about states. States are higher levels of consciousness, and I'm entitling this, How to Be an Everyday Mystic in Three Dimensions. Okay, what's a mystic? Mystics are people who have direct experiences with God. If you've ever felt God's presence in any way, you're a mystic. Mystic experiences. Christianity began in a blaze of mystical experiences. All of the world's great religions began when some lonely founder had a mystical experience with God. And then we took it from there and thought it and changed it and reduced it and messed it up and various other things. But it always began with this mystical experience with God. So being a mystic, what are mystics? Richard Dawson wrote a book called The God Delusion. He thinks we're deluded. Sometimes we look deluded, you know. As one fellow said, I know the voices aren't real, but they have some great ideas. Psychiatrist remarked, actually, these aren't bad times to be delusional. Some pollsters have surveyed the American population and asked those who claim to have a mystical experience with God. It was interesting. The first poll was taken back in 1963, which happened to be the first year I came to my current church out of seminary at Broadway Church. And it found that 22% of Americans claimed to have had a mystical experience. They did another poll 50 years later this year, 50%. Confess they have had a mystical encounter with God. That means it's doubled. Now, I don't know whether that means people are freer to talk about mystical experiences or they're having more. I know as I started talking about them, I'd have people come up and say, you know, I've never told anybody this, but... Because they figured they might be able to talk about their mystical experience everywhere else except in church. Whoa, what's wrong with that picture? Okay. How many of you all have had at least one mystical experience with a departed loved one shortly after they died, or some spiritual guide, or with Jesus, or with God's presence, or hearing something? Let's see. All right. All right, a bunch of mystics. That's wonderful. I want to share a quote from Albert Einstein, who said, the most beautiful emotion we can experience is the mystical. It is the power of all true art and science. The one to whom this emotion is a stranger, who can no longer wonder and stand wrapped in awe, is as good as dead. My favorite picture of Albert Einstein. Now, if you don't want to take a deist approach that Albert Einstein is, by the way, he came to the conclusion that God had to exist because of the physics and quantum physics. So let's quote from Hans Kuhn, a good Catholic theologian, who says, "The Christian of the future will be a mystic or not a Christian at all." Notice how cleverly I quote from Catholic theologians in this group. Wow. If we're going to talk about mysticism, we have to talk about states of consciousness. States of consciousness are modes of awareness. There are ordinary states of consciousness. You're walking along the beach with a couple with your dog, and it's just a wonderful, ordinary, beautiful day in Santa Barbara. And then there are also altered states of consciousness. I see you laugh. I see this. We've had some mystical experiences out here. But that's what I thought. You know, the difference between a Catholic and a Baptist. The Catholics will say hi to each other in the liquor store. you got that, didn't you? Oh, wow. Magic mushrooms. I don't know. That may be a new thing from our time, psychedelic experiences. Those are altered states of consciousness or hallucinations. Or have you ever been hypnotized? How many people here have been hypnotized? Okay, four or five or six of us. That's wonderful. That's an altered state of consciousness. Or maybe you're entranced by a work of art and you just get lost in it. That's another state of consciousness. Or the whirling dervishes of the Sufi, the mystical branch of Islam. For a while we had two Sufi-oriented Christian women who came to our church. And while we would worship and sing, they would do their Sufi whirling in the aisles. And it was just gorgeous. And they were praying. Their tears would come to their eyes and our eyes too. It was an altered state of consciousness. Or maybe you're listening to beautiful music. Or maybe you're doing something dangerous, totally focused. That's an altered state of consciousness. We go through three states of awareness or consciousness every 24 hours. Everybody here, if you have normal sleep patterns, which some of us at our age don't have normal sleep patterns. But anyway, by and large, every 24 hours, we go through these three states of consciousness. The first one is waking. That's the one you're in now. At least most of you are in now, okay? Ordinary consciousness, that's walking your dog with your loved one along the beach. And then there's dreaming consciousness. We go to sleep, and in REM sleep, we dream. We have inner picturing. We see things. We hear things. We sense things. We feel things. And yet it's not our physical body doing this. This is a dreaming state of consciousness, a subtle realm. It's not physical, but it appears to be physical. It's a more subtle realm than the gross physical realm. And then we have dreamless. Oh, there's little Jimmy dreaming of presents for Christmas. Okay. Then we have dreamless sleep. That's when we move into that deep level of sleep where there are no forms. There's no pictures. There's no sounds we're hearing. It's very, very deep, deep sleep. Okay? Those are the three states of consciousness we all go through all the time. Now, let me translate these three examples of states of consciousness into states of mysticism. Waking, dreaming, dreamless sleep, we all go through them. They don't seem mystical, but they are. And here's the mystical versions. The waking ordinary is seeing God everywhere. It's looking out and seeing God everywhere in a waking state. It's reflection and service. Reflecting about God wherever you are. Seeing the poor and the needy or however way you might help and helping out there. It has to do with God out there who's in and beyond everything and is everywhere and beyond everywhere. Let's change the picture to someone maybe reflecting and also someone washing feet to give the idea of reflection and service. Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. There's dreaming. The translation into the mystical state of consciousness there is connecting to God in prayer. And by prayer, I mean a very special thing. I mean picturing, hearing, sensing, feeling in that inner, non-physical, subtle energy dream state. And let's give a picture of someone praying, just sitting and praying. Now, I differentiate that between that and what we've called dreamless sleep or peaceful resting, and I call this identifying with God. That is through spiritual practices and meditation. I think there's a difference between prayer and meditation. We'll talk about that a little bit, and we need to change the picture because occasionally my spiritual practice looks like that and instead of staying awake. It's abiding as God. Now, I know this is the one for those of us who come from traditional backgrounds. It sounds too mystical, you know, but let's change that. That we are the light of the world, and that light is God, and that light is us. So let's talk about waking state of consciousness. The goal of the Christian life. What's the goal of the Christian life? This is my understanding of the goal of the Christian life. I thought very carefully about every word in this sentence. The goal of the Christian life is to have the same kind of relationship that Jesus had with God. And to manifest it in love for the world with our unique gifts. That's what I understand to be the goal of the Christian life. Okay, now the question is, what kind of relationship did Jesus have with God? Well, one very important aspect was he had a mystical relationship with God. A mystical relationship. A condensed version of Jesus' life and teaching focused on the practices in what I call 9 unparalleled words about the Christian experience are these. Jesus talked about God. Jesus talked to God. And Jesus talked as God. I repeat those 9 words over and over again to my congregation. I repeat them in my book, wherever I am, because they offer the most incredible picture straight from Jesus' life. Tonight we'll see them as a picture about painting a new a picture of God. This morning about states of consciousness. So the first one we want to talk about is about God. Jesus talked about God. Seeing God who is everywhere and beyond us by reflection and by serving. That is usually called contemplation in religious circles. Jesus saw God everywhere. The God beyond us. He thought about God as close to nature in the long walks to work, which is he probably worked in Sephora, 4 miles away, back and forth. He read and memorized the Torah. He saw lessons about spiritual life everywhere in nature. He studied with teachers. He served. God was everywhere to him. Sometimes we are like the fish in the water who says, "Water, water, I've got to find water. I've been searching for God all my life. I can't find God." We're surrounded by God. We can't not find God. God is everywhere, within us and outside of us. The God, as Paul says in Corinthians, the God in whom we live and move and have our being. So, reflecting about God. The universe is our first Bible. The universe is the very first Bible. The heavens reveal the glory of God. Let me mention briefly 5 places we can see and feel God in the world around us. Pick the ones you resonate with with most. I love Hafiz, the Sufi poet's poems. And one poem, he says, God courts us with the beauty of this world. The spirit is manifest in the glory of nature. The spirits manifest in the glory of nature. Mountains and oceans and meadows and trees and parks and flowers. The spirit is manifest in the beauty of art. This is the Monet, the 7x14 foot Monet in Kansas City in the Nelson Art Gallery, not too far from where I live in Kansas City. And earlier last year, they had, oh, thanks, Bob. Thank you. You're good at lifting things up. Thank you. That's perfect. Just perfect. The other two parts of the triptych, which are 44 feet wide, were all together. And when I came into the room where they were, I just started crying. It was so luminous and so beautiful. I felt God's presence. We see it in architecture, the beauty of art in architecture, Stonehenge, the beauty of art expressed in a very, very ancient religious tradition. The lotus, the new lotus temple in India. How beautiful. And just to put in a plug for Kansas City, that's our new performing arts center. I heard Joshua Bell do a violin concert there. As it was being built, and I would drive past it, I would look at it, and my spirit would just be inspired. Inspired. God is in this beautiful art. And speaking of listening to Joshua Bell play the violin, the spirit is manifest in meaningful music. I say meaningful, I don't mean elevator music or all the mindless stuff, but music that means something to you. For me, it's Mozart, but it may be rock and roll or rap or whatever. But if it means something to you, you can experience God in that. The spirit is manifest in the wisdom of the centuries, found in spiritual books, found in deep conversations and expansive philosophies. For those of us that like to study and read and explore, I get all excited when I read a book about that connects me with some aspect of the spiritual life or God in a new way. And then finally, the Spirit is manifest in compassionate service to others with our gifts. For some people, the edge of experiencing God is in helping, it's in serving. I don't know if you've heard the studies, Mother Teresa, each one of them is Jesus in disguise. The study of the Mother Teresa effect, 100 Harvard students were just shown a brief clip of Mother Teresa walking. She wasn't talking or doing anything else. And then they measured their immune systems before and after. After that brief clip of looking at Mother Teresa, their immune systems had grown significantly stronger. Wow. Let me ask you, just take a quick poll. Of these five things, what do you identify with most? How many identify most with nature, seeing God in nature? How many seeing God in art? Okay. How many seeing God, hearing God in meaningful music? All right. Okay. How about wisdom through books and conversations? And all right. All right. How about compassion through service? Okay. Some of you all raised your hand on every one of those. All right. This morning when I got up, And you all provided me with a wonderful room right there on the ocean. And so I got up and walked along the beach. And, wow. If I go to some place where you have to be quiet and worship, I have to sit on my hands. Aside from that, my hands are like, you know, infinite God in whom I live and move and have my being. This is beautiful. And I just raised my hands to the ocean that seemed like it went on for an infinity. How beautiful, how beautiful. And then a beautiful young lady came sailing along on her inline skates that my grandkids have. I never had the privilege, Grandpa, you need to try the in-laws. No, no, I don't think I will do that. And she whizzed past, and I thought, how beautiful, how gorgeous. And then an older fellow came along, and I he surprised me. He said, good morning, Grandfather. Oh, wow. You know, maybe he had a Native American background or something there. And then I heard this mumbling voice. And I'm sure this was a street person that came along, talking to himself, carrying some bags and sacks. And I remembered Mother Teresa. And I watched him as he walked away. And it was harder. But finally, I could see Jesus in and as that homeless person. Jesus is everywhere. That's reflection. That's contemplation. Okay, let's move on to what Jesus talked about. To God, about God, to God, and as God. Contemplation, that's about God. Seeing God who is everywhere and beyond us. We can do that anywhere, anytime. We can do it all the time. Secondly, Jesus talked to God. To God. Wow. He connected to the God who is beside us. There's the God who's beyond us, and there's the God who's right beside us. He did that by learning how to pray. The religious word for that is communion. Communion with God. Jesus talked to God all the time. He heard things. He saw things. He got guidance. He felt things in a deeper state of consciousness. When it comes to spirituality, we are most familiar with waking or ordinary states of consciousness in the spiritual realm. That's when we're reading the Bible and praying. Let's see, did I skip one? Yes. That's when we're reading the Bible and praying. A reflective but still an ordinary state of consciousness. Often that's when we're in church, in the church service. Maybe when we're serving, giving money, or helping someone. Those are the waking state of consciousness we're most familiar with. We're least familiar with the non-ordinary states of consciousness. The states of consciousness that are like dreaming except we're awake, where we hear music, we hear sounds, we hear words, we see pictures, we see Jesus, we see Mary, whatever it might be. Things happen. Things go on. A man asked a spiritual friend to teach him how to pray. It's easy, the friend said. You just take two chairs. You sit down in one chair and put the other chair in front of you. And then you ask Jesus to sit down in the other chair. You know, Jesus said he'd be with us all the time, and I don't know, maybe he gets tired of standing, but I'm sure he'd be glad to sit in that chair. So you put him in there. And then you talk to him. And then you shut up, and you let him talk to you. That's it. That's prayer. Well, that's a lot more than I was taught. The man died a year later. His wife said to his spiritual friend, my husband did a strange thing the night he passed. We found him in bed, but he'd moved over to the side of the bed and placed his head on the chair next to the bed. What do you think that was about? Well, we know what that was about. Jesus was real to him. The man had learned how to pray. Having a real prayer is having a real inner relationship with God who is beside you. As Jesus or father or mother or however God comes to you, grandfather, grandmother, however God comes to you, another tradition, Buddha, Krishna, and it's full of intimate back-and-forth conversation, love-filled silence, picturing, sensing, feeling, moving, struggling, singing, thanksgiving, adoration, devotion. And it's not tame. It connects us to the subtle spiritual realm of consciousness whose equivalent is dreaming sleep. Now, did I just invent this? Is this just something I talk about to sound spiritual? Did anybody in the New Testament ever pray this way? Aha. Let's look at Peter. Peter went up on the rooftop to pray. Rooftops in those days, that was just another room in the house, okay? So you went up there to do all sorts of things. He went up to the rooftop to pray. And he became hungry. And he wanted something to eat. And while it was being prepared, he fell into a trance. Now, is there any word in that verse of the New Testament that may be strange? How many of you all in seminary or church, or sermons, homilies for 50, 60, 70, how many of you all have heard one on trance? Me neither. Me neither. You know, and I went to a Baptist school. I mean, we believe the Bible, every word in the Bible. Well, somehow they didn't get anywhere around to that word. What is that? Trance. Wow, here he is. So he had a trance. What happened in his trance? Well, the word trance is ecstasis. 5 years of Greek, I have to show you that I can still use it, okay? We get our word ecstasy from it. It's a subtle, dreamlike, but awake, altered state of consciousness where one is connected to spiritual realities. So there was Peter, and he was having a trance. And this is what happened. He saw the heavens open and something like a large sheet coming down, being lowered to the ground by its four corners. In it were all kinds of four-footed creatures and reptiles and birds of the air. Now, did he actually see something out there? Well, if he had a video camera, would we record all that? No, I don't think so. He was in a dream state. But to Peter, it was very, very real. Remember the last real dream you had? And you woke up scared, or you woke up exhilarated. Very real. And I believe he was seeing this in the inside of him in a state of prayer. And then he heard a voice. Get up, Peter, kill and eat. But Peter said, by no means, Lord, for I've never eaten anything that's profane and unclean. I mean, my Bible says you can't do that. The church I go to says we have never eaten anything unclean. I mean, and the priests, I mean, they are rabid about this. We don't touch those kind of that kind of food. Wow, it's a tradition. I mean, the high priest and the Pope and Billy Graham and everybody says you don't do this, okay? And so isn't God so wonderful? If we don't get it the first time, God does it again and again and again. So the voice said to him again a second time, what God has made clean, you must not call unclean. This happened three times. And the thing was suddenly taken up to heaven. Wow. We don't need to be afraid of missing God's voice if we're listening, because she will keep saying it again and again. Trance prayer, a real inner relationship with the God who is beside you as Jesus, or however, whoever God comes to you as personally. It's full of intimate back and forth conversation, love-filled silence, picturing, sensing, feeling, moving, struggling, singing, thanksgiving, adoration, and devotion. And it's not tame. It's not tame. Wow. Well, there's an isolated incident for you, isn't it? I don't think so. And I, Paul, says in Acts, returned to Jerusalem, and while I was praying in the temple, I fell into a trance and saw Jesus saying to me, hurry up and get out of Jerusalem quickly. There's that nasty word again. It keeps coming up. That's that mystical word that we don't talk about in church. Because as everybody has their own connection to God, well, you know, they may say, you know, we think the priest is wrong. Ooh, that's messy. So if I'm in power, I say, well, no trances. I'll tell you what God says. I'll tell you what God says. Wow. The early Christians, prayer and worship in the temple and the homes was trance worship. When was the last time during Mass, not that you fell asleep, but you moved into a trance state? And the beauty of the Mass, the beauty and poetry of the liturgy, moved you into a different state of consciousness. And you felt God's presence, you heard God's voice, perhaps you saw pictures. The early Christians learned how to pray. And we can learn it too. We can learn how to pray this way too. Where do they learn how to pray this way? What did they learn about? I mean, when Peter and Paul said they fell into a trance, nobody got upset and walked out of church that Sunday morning. You know, it was, that's what everybody did. Where did they learn that? Well, they learned it from Jesus. But he would go to lonely places to pray. Wow. He spent this time away in prayer. I believe he learned to pray this way in Sepphoris. Marcus Borg and I and some others agree that Jesus learned to pray in Sepphoris. Sepphoris was 4 miles away. It was a booming, rebuilding Roman town, the crossroads of many from all over the world, scholars, teachers, traders coming in. Jesus would and his family would walk that 4 miles back and forth every day to do construction work, a tekon, and it's not just carpenter, it's kind of like working with your hands, construction work. And I believe Jesus learned to trance pray and meditate from the mystics of many traditions who traveled through Sepphoris. Where did you learn to pray? Where did we learn to pray? Jesus said, whenever you pray, go into the closet and shut the door. It's a prayer closet. It's something on the inside. Something on the inside of us. Well, what did we learn about that? How did we learn how to pray that way? How did we learn how to pray? Well, we usually started off, you know, with bedtime prayers. You know, that's okay. That's okay. If you're still praying them this way, and you're not 5 years old. Okay. So a lot of us learned how to pray by listening to the pastor or priest pray in church. Now there can be some beautiful prayers. Some wonderful prayers that are written in the liturgy, or if you come from a free church tradition that or a black church tradition that you just can lift you up. But those are not prayers for praying when we're by ourselves and want to move into a different state of consciousness. Or we learn to pray from the Lord's Prayer. Our Father. The Lord's Prayer is not a prayer for praying. It's a prayer for teaching. There's no record of anybody in the New Testament ever praying the Lord's Prayer. Or Jesus praying the Lord's Prayer. He didn't spend all night in the wilderness repeating the Lord's Prayer. Okay, the Lord's Prayer is a beautiful prayer for teaching, but it doesn't get us into that dreamlike trance state. Or if you're in a modern, postmodern thing, prayer is kind of like thinking good thoughts, you know, having good thoughts. Nothing wrong with good thoughts, it's just not prayer. Or help, that's the prayer, you know, that's a good prayer. There are sometimes, that's all we could come out with, that's okay. But how can we learn how to pray? Well, how can we learn how to pray? I was talking about this the other Sunday, and a Navy chaplain was in the services, and he had been a chaplain for a large number of years and had all his degrees and everything. And when I finished talking about trance prayer and two chairs and stuff, he came to me and said, he says, I've never heard about this before. And he was driving home, stopped by the grocery store, went out with his groceries, sat in his car, and he said, I think I'm going to do what Paul said this morning. And so he pictured himself sitting, and he pictured Jesus coming toward him, and suddenly he realized the picture he had of himself, he was shriveled up and cold, he had no clothes on, he was wretched, he felt lonely. I guess if you're a chaplain traveling all over the world, constantly changing relationships, that would not be unusual. And then he said, I saw Jesus coming with his flowing white robe. And when he got up to me, he took his flowing white robe and he just swept me up into it and wrapped me up into it and held me. And he started crying as he was telling me this the next Sunday. He says, that was transforming. He said, and I just cried there in the car and thought, wow, I think I want to pray like this all the time. Why not? Well, let me tell you. Okay. Well, just let me briefly, and then we're going to take a break. Let me briefly tell you about the five or six stages I've gone through in learning how to pray. The gift of my Southern Baptist church was an emphasis on a personal relationship with Jesus. They said, ask Jesus to come into your life, and so I did. If you've never asked Jesus to come into your life, do. That's the way you start a personal relationship with God. Now, God may come to you in other forms. For Jesus, God came to him in the form of Daddy, of Abba, of Father. Isn't it interesting? Jesus called God by the same name he called his daddy, Joseph. Wow. That's close and personal. And so I grew up talking to God. They taught me to pray. That was wonderful. They taught me to talk to God. But nobody ever said God would answer back. As a matter of fact, if anybody said God answered back, they were immediately suspicious. And on the MMPI, the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, if you hear from God, the schizophrenic scale goes way, way up there. Okay? So my mom, who was also a good Southern Baptist, but she liked unity, and she liked unity's word for the day. Bless their hearts. And so she would get unity's word for the day. And so I began to do that for a while. And then one day I said to myself, you know, unity word for the day is fine, but I wonder if I can't ask God if God has a word for me for today. Why not get it directly, you know? So I started doing that. I ask for a word for the day. Usually when I get up in the morning, that's the first thing I do. God, what's your word for today? The word this morning when I finally woke out of a beautiful night's sleep was flow. Flow, I know what that meant. I know what that meant. As an Enneagram 1, it meant don't worry. Okay? Don't be uptight. Just flow. Just flow. So for 50 years, I asked God for a word for the day. And then gradually that began, the question began, God, is there anything you want to tell me? Anything you want to tell me today? And I'd write down just a word or a short phrase. I don't write a lot. But it was just, I just learned some amazing things about my days and my life. And then I started to hang around charismatics. Now, they were scary at first. You know, charismatics raise their hands and pray in ways you can't understand and are loud and noisy and have very conservative theology. But there was something alive about them, and I was attracted to it. And so what happened is I began experiencing the Spirit in a different way. My first experience with the Spirit was when I went to an Episcopalian prayer retreat. Episcopalians were safe. You know, they were reserved and theologically educated like I thought I was. Only this is a bunch of Pentecostal Episcopalians. You know, I didn't realize that. And so they said, okay, we're going to pray for each other now. Paul, it's our turn to pray for you. And so they put me in the center, and they all gathered around me. And the great big African-American woman who was leading the prayer time says, oh, boy, we got our hands on a Baptist preacher. If I could have run out then, I would have run out. But they prayed for me, and some words I could understand, and some words I couldn't understand, and absolutely nothing happened because that's the way I planned it. I mean, I was a minister, a preacher, and I had everything I needed, thank you. And so I had my brakes on, you know, and it was 2 weeks later, sitting in bed reading an Agatha Christie murder mystery, suddenly, whammo. The Spirit just filled the room, and this was 50 some years ago. I was living at home and still in school, and I loved my parents, which was unusual at the time, at that particular time. I loved the Walls. I loved Agatha Christie. I even loved the Catholics, and back then Baptists didn't love Catholics. You know, it was an incredible experience. Matter of fact, what had happened is I started moving from my head to my heart. I've always been a head person. Longest journey in the world for some of us to move from head to heart. I began to learn to pray from my heart. Learning to pray from my heart means filled with adoration and worship and praise from inside here, not just from my head. As the Rumi, the Sufi Muslim poet says, everyone sees the unseen in proportion to the clarity of the heart. Needs to come from the heart. When moving to the modern stage, people often lose touch with this kind of praying because they think it's regressive. And then I learned to pray in a regular way. I came across integral philosophy, and most of these people in integral philosophy, they talked about their daily practice. They would do this, you know, lotus position and sit and meditate, and I thought, my gracious, they're serious about this. You know, Ken Wilber would meditate for hours every day, you know, and I read a little Bible a little bit and said, "Hi God, you know, bless my day, and we'll be on our way." And so, for the first time, I was surrounded by people who had a spiritual practice that they said was transforming. And 12 years ago, I decided I was going to too. And so I learned how to pray. I started off with 5 minutes, then 10 minutes, then 20, and now an hour or two. I can't keep myself from it. I just, because of all the wonderful things that are happening, of what I see, I began seeing pictures. I would visualize Jesus at first, seeing Jesus in different ways. If you can imagine a sunset, that's great. You can also imagine Jesus standing with you, or some spiritual being, however it works. And so I began picturing Jesus. I wanted to see Jesus. And in the meantime, I felt like I also wanted to see Jesus' mother, Mary. And she was sort of here on the side, and eventually, recently, she's kind of combined with Mary Magdalene, and so we got double vision Marys over here. And I don't know how that works. I don't understand it. And then there was somebody named Michael who was over here, and I got in touch with him, and he introduced me to some people from the 4th century, and we had some fascinating conversations. They were in a monastery, by the way, that loved the Book of Thomas, that called God Mother, and had women in the monastery. I didn't know they had women in the monastery then until I researched it later on and found out they did. They did. Well, anyway, those things happened. And then one day I realized, as I was praying, Jesus was always out here about 10 feet away. And so I said, "Jesus, I want you to come closer." Oh, I forgot to tell you something, okay? I was married when I was 28, was married for 33 years, had the two wonderful kids, and in the course of that time, our church has a lot of a lot of gays and lesbians, that we were just sort of benignly, "Don't talk about it, be quiet, you know, we'll be okay. But they kept saying to me, "Paul, you've changed your mind about women, you've changed your mind about all these other things, why not change your mind about that awful position Southern Baptists have about gays?" So I said, "Okay, we'll tackle that." I did. I found out I was completely wrong. God approves of, God didn't make any mistakes in making us. So I changed my mind. Theologically, when I did that, I got in touch with my feelings and began to realize that I was gay. Walking on the beach in Florida, I said to my wife, "Listen, I've come to some startling realization." I said, I'm gay. Her response was, "What a relief." She figured there was something, okay? Okay, so this is all to say, and I have a partner now for 10 years, and we're wonderful together. Okay, this is all prelude to say what happened next. I said to Jesus, "I want to be closer." And so Jesus zipped right up, and he was three inches from me. I could hear him breathing. I could feel his body heat, his perspiration. And embarrassingly, I started to get aroused. And I started apologizing to Jesus. And he said, "Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that." And so we began talking and conversing. And we had the most wonderful time. And then a few weeks later, he said, "Now, you know what? You so much need to be touched. You've got enough words to last for a lifetime, enough images. I'm going to move over here to your side. And I'm going to be right here alongside you." And ever since then, I feel Jesus' presence right here on my arm. I feel that all the time, every minute, every hour of every day. He's always there. That is wonderful. You see, and this is just my. We're going to stop because it's food time, and we'll talk about the last thing the last time and have questions. In dreaming state, we are downloading from our unconscious. In deep prayer, we're downloading from the cosmic internet. We are downloading spiritual realities. You can learn to deepen your prayer and connect with God in that personal God beside you way. It will probably be different than my experiences, because your experiences will be yours. But they will be wonderful, they will be transforming, they will be life-changing. In 15 minutes after we've eaten, when we come back, I want to talk about as God, and then we'll have a time for question and answers. Thank you very much. Let's see.